Oh, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Seattle Restaurant Podcast. We have a very fun show today. We got a lot of history. People I've known for almost 10 to 15 years. And another person I've known for about 10 to 15 years, Dave Storm. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. First of all, just got to say, holy fuck, 11 years sober of yesterday?
Yeah, man.
That it, like, we're getting very old, man.
I know.
11 years. Thank you. That's fucking amazing. How do you feel?
Feels great. The amount of support everybody showed me yesterday, like just reaching out, giving me love and saying sweet things, just made me feel really special. So thank you.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Have a good week.
Yeah, man. We did summer numbers on Saturday.
I told you it's
February is popping.
January was hell. February is May.
January sucked. I don't even want to hear that word.
Yeah. So just real quick, I had that really fun. I got invited to the Corvus & Co. employee party on Monday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were trying to catch the ferry.
Yeah, so we caught the ferry and got over to Clearwater. And I'm not going to get too deep into it, but just want to say the Corvus & Co. people are fucking the most wonderful people. I didn't know any of them except my buddy Eddie. And now we're lifelong friends. And thank you for inviting me to your party. We had a great time at the Clearwater Casino.
Looked like you guys had some nice rooms. Looks like a nice casino.
Okay, so I will say this. Like, so me and Eddie go to check in, and like, if you've ever been to Vegas, they always do this thing where they're like, oh, like, ooh, what a nice room. And like, you kind of get used to it that they're kind of just hyping you up.
Yeah.
And they do the same, ooh, like, you got this room. I'm like, oh, whatever. It was the fuck. It was like multiple rooms. Like, I don't know why they gave me and Eddie this giant room. I don't even work at the fucking company. And like, it was, yeah, we had this baller room. So thank you. We ended up just playing CeeLo all night. Didn't even go to casino. Anyway, so I feel like today might be a long episode. I know you have to get out of here, Dave, but there's a lot of history in this room. First of all, on my left, the producer of the Fremont Market and about 1,000 other things we're going to get into, Ryan Ryder. Ryan, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for having us.
I get so nervous when I fuck up names. And over here, let's just fuck this one. I feel like your name probably gets fucked up more. Carlo, how you doing, Carlo, from Don Lucho's and Bailaba? What's going on, brother?
Doing great, man.
I feel like
Carlos. Yeah, right.
I feel like I caught
fucked up Carlos, dude.
I didn't. No, I said
no,
Carlos.
It's Carlos.
No,
it's Carlos.
I fucked up his name the first time I met him, and then I learned Ryan. I've known for 15 years. I still can't get his name right. Let's just jump right into it, Ryan.
Yeah.
What? Tell us everything that you do.
I've been back here since my days in LA. I grew up here. My family owned business is behind the Fremont Sunday Market, the Ballard Farmers Market. And from there, we kind of tried to expand on a lot of things. So we started the Mobile Food Rodeo back in like 2010, right when all the food trucks started to pop up here.
Those were some of my favorite events.
That's what I said
we're coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the goal was is really to get it curbside and just get people to explore and see what was out there. And I know, obviously, we've changed a lot because of just the shift since the pandemic, and that really changed a lot of the food service in the mobile format.
Right.
So we're still working to get that back. But yeah, Seattle Street Food Festival, South Lake Union Saturday Market, the Seattle Night Markets over at Magnuson Hangar, and things like the Hangar 30 Flea. So really, the goal is just to help amplify what's local, kind of in a hyper-local format, and just make it fun, you know, and easy.
And, I mean, you've been doing it for so long. How do you keep it interesting? Like, I know this last weekend, my dumbass wasn't there, but, you know, the Lunar New Year sold-out event. And I heard it was banging.
It was almost too banging. we had to cut off tickets because what we're really trying to better understand within the format of, you know, Seattle as being kind of generally, like a lot of us, we procrastinate to decide on what we want to do. And so what we've always tried to remind people is that the more we know earlier, the easier we can expand on the service and how we support it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was we sold 3,500 tickets, and for the most part, it was pretty good. And we're just trying to play more as a host to the community and be inclusive. So we're really trying to format more partnerships so that we don't have to be the ones to program. We're really just helping to give a format and a place that's affordable for anybody to kind of do their thing as well.
And I mean, it speaks to this. I'm pretty much at most of the stuff that you do because, listen, I've been in Seattle a long time. I worked with a lot of different event producers, and you guys just make it easy. You guys have been doing it long enough where it's just plug and play. You know, I constantly talk about, like, how much I love the Fremont Market on this podcast because it's a fun event. It's a fun day, and, like, it just works like clockwork, and you got a great team that puts it together. And thanks for having me at your fun stuff. Carlo, moving from the food truck to restaurant to the nightclub. Talk to us. What for people that don't know, what all do you do?
Well, I actually started. Matter of fact, Ryan's all the stuff he does with food trucks is what inspired me. I wouldn't say directly that I was already inspired of doing it, but I was like, wow, there's really a scene for mobile food.
Yeah. When did you get done?
So I started doing the cart in 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but back then, carts were kind of tough. Like, yeah, I remember I would reach out. I'll reach out to Jonathan and be like, "Hey, I have a cart," and he'd be like, carts."
Yeah.
I was like, "Damn!" So I was like, kind of blackballed from the beginning.
That is so funny. I forgot. And you know what?
Is it because of the weather?
No, I want to say as a food truck guy, I was the same way. I was like, just carts aren't the same. They're just like they're not the food truck boys. And now I'm like, fuck food.
Well, I think it was. I don't know exactly what it was, but I think it was also like in terms of like spacing or I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
They are harder to maneuver.
Harder maneuver and stuff like that.
But you can still get them.
Respect for carts.
But anyway, I started the hardest way you could possibly start with a cart, and I know you have a cart now, so I don't know how you feel. Is it better these days? I wouldn't
change what I do for anything. Yeah. If someone gave me a free food truck tomorrow, I would go sell it. I love my
and get another cart.
Exactly. I love the space it takes. I love everything about it.
I love the cart too. So what I stuck to was breweries actually.
Yep.
So I just did nothing but breweries.
Yeah.
For the most part with the cart.
Yep.
And I worked with.
And I'm sorry. Can you tell us about your food real quick?
Peruvian food. And back then, like Peruvian food, nobody knew about Peruvian food.
I did not know about Peruvian food.
People were like, "What Peruvian?" Like, nah, you should do. And matter of fact, delicious. I started with a business partner who is a good chef. He has a great place in Hawaii right now. I just visited him not too long ago. But back then, even him, you know, like he was like, "Dude, nobody knows about Peruvian food here. It's a bad idea." I'm like, "No, it's not. It's like it's a big deal in Miami and New York." But he's like, "But nobody knows about it here. But we can make it be known."
That's how
it's already successful like everywhere else in LA. I'm like, it's creeping up. You know, like it's San Francisco, Portland has it. Portland has a place called Andina. That's been really popular for years and years. And so anyway, eventually he ended up doing his own thing, and I just went straight Peruvian with it. Because before it was like a Peruvian Latin mix when we first started, like the first 3 months.
And you know what I want to say about Don Luch's and what you did, you have fostered a community that I've never seen before. I remember early on I came to check you out at Chop Suey because you were doing those pop-ups. And
well, that was already after the food truck and everything. Sure. You know?
But going restaurant style. It was just like I felt like a visitor, you know, because like you'd bring a whole group of people like together, and you'd be like, dude, this is a whole vibe of people that like other people don't know about. So always love your ability to do that. So then restaurant. So
restaurant opened right before the pandemic.
And where is that located?
That is on 80th and Roosevelt that would be Maple Leaf neighborhood.
Yep. I lived about during the pandemic. I lived like 5 minutes away. And
that's right.
I was there. I was there at the Shambles like almost every other day. One thing I always loved about you is you have a construction background. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I have a lot of friends that have opened restaurants. You know, we had Casey from Copper Pot Bakery, and you know his whole thing was like it's been a year and he's just waiting on construction. I come into Chuck. He used to own a barbecue restaurant. I come into his restaurant to collect a check for hot sauce, and Carlo's just like looking around. I think it was known that you're going to take over this restaurant. And then I think I moved over there, and like you had the place open in like 4 hours.
It was 2 weeks though. It was two weeks
turnaround, and like not just like shoddy. Like you know the guys, and like it is. It's like you know. I'm very grateful for my connections to like the music industry and like me able to do these backstage caterings, blah, blah, blah. Like you utilizing your construction people, it was like Sim City. And I love seeing I love seeing the same thing at Bila Bar. Real quick, let's touch on Bila Bar. What is it?
Bila Bar is my second concept of Peruvian food. So I'm doing like Peruvian bar food, which would be like traditional Peruvian burgers, sandwiches.
I was going to say for those listeners who don't know much about Peruvian food, like myself, what are your like top two dishes?
Well, at Don Lucho's, we do straight traditional dishes. So like over there would be lomo saltado, which is like a flame steak, and then ceviche. Nice. Which is like what Peru is like really famous for.
And like ceviche is you've kind of talked about.
Every country has their own take on ceviche. Peru's famous for it. Like we're number one in ceviche.
And is it multiple kinds or?
We have several different kinds.
Because weren't you talking about opening up like a cevicheria?
That would be another concept I'd consider. But it's more like a summer spring one. You know, it's kind of tough.
Do a pop up.
Do a
pop up at Fremont Market.
No, exactly. I have a trailer already set up in my patio. So basically, what I've done in the past is in the summertime. I'll get one of my chefs back there, and we'll just have like straight ceviche menu, you know, from like certain.
And how many options?
Probably like five different styles of ceviche, and then we do tiraditos, which is like a sashimi style cut of the fish, very fresh. And then we'll have like a couple other, you know, like gausa with acevicha and stuff like that. Korean food goes all over the, you know, like we have like a strong Japanese and Chinese influence. Yeah. There was a huge gold rush back in the late 1800s, and like a bunch of Chinese and Japanese people made it down there. So that's why our food's like...
Can you give me an example how that plays?
Like Lomo Saltado, like one of our most famous dishes. Like it has like a little bit of Cantonese flavor in it because it's like flame steak with a little bit of soy sauce. And
That's fucking cool. And and then it's also food, but also it's a little bit of a nightclub.
Bilabar. So
yeah, real quick, did we say
Bilabar,
where it is?
We're going straight.
I don't think we said where it is.
So Fremont, it's the old ballroom space for people that know Fremont. So
great space.
It has a dance floor on it. So we're also a nightclub, lounge, you know, we have pool tables. It's just such a beautiful space.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the guys that have had it since 99, I teamed up with them, James Wyman.
That's kind of a cool story. So, the ballroom people, they sold it for a minute?
No, they've had the lease since 99, but like what killed the ballroom was, the pandemic.
Right.
So after the pandemic, you know, that was a place that was just like full from, you know, like you can't even really walk in there sometimes. And that was all the way up to the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic killed that. So they needed to reinvent themselves.
And what they do again is
after that, they did a concept, Telerico's, which is in West Seattle, and it works great over there, but it just didn't really work there.
Right.
Then they moved to a Dragster concept.
Yeah, that's right.
And then that didn't work very well. There were some issues there. And I'm the third concept coming in post pandemic.
Right.
Yeah. So we went with Bilabar,
and you're trying to bring it back to those back days where you can't even walk.
So with
and,
with a Latin twist, you know, like I really love the ballroom. I have so many memories and some non memories, a lot of non memories, like walking out.
2000s.
Yeah,
that's crazy. There,
who doesn't know that place? You know,
yeah.
So like I want to bring that back to what it was like then, but with a Latin twist.
Cool. So for our listeners, they want to go out on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. What was kind of the vibe over there?
So Thursday nights, we have
if you're a white person, can you come in there? Or is it just Latin?
For sure. Everybody's welcome, and that's the thing. Like I'm curating the music according to the crowd too. Like Thursdays, we're doing like a straight Latin night, so it's like bachata, reggaeton, salsa, merengue. And we're going to start doing twice a month some parties with, I can't really talk about it right now, but it's going to be like a different theme twice a month. And
it's
going to
be that cool.
Yeah. Can't really put it out yet.
Yeah.
But so basically we're trying to switch it up a little bit on Thursday. And then Fridays and Saturdays, our crowd is very mixed. We're very different from like the straight Latin clubs that are like 95-98% Latin folks that are in there. Like we get a strong showing of just American people, UW kids and stuff. So the music that I'm curating there is like straight, like I'm going for reggaeton, which everybody knows at this point, and then like top 40 and hip hop.
I had to ask you the other day.
Well, you must be living in the Northwest, buddy, if you don't know about reggaeton. Number one artist in the world right now is reggaeton, Bad Bunny. You know, like he's number one.
I gotta say this, and then we're gonna move on. You let me hang out there on New Year's Eve, and you know, I like doing different weird stuff, and like I just had nothing to do, and I had one of the best nights of my fucking life. Like
you had a lot to do that night.
I talked about it like the next day. Like for someone that's like hyperactive ADHD, it was the perfect job because like. In that chaotic setting, like organizing bottles was like just playing music for me. I loved it. So thanks
and
for
that,
having me.
That was our record selling day at Bilabar.
It's because I was there.
Yeah.
What's the first thing I said? I said, you're like, can you work fast? And I think I said, and it doesn't matter what I said. Ryan.
Yeah.
I want to, so we touched about this on the podcast before. Reddit, fucking newspapers, whatever, they're all in an uproar about charging for the Christmas market, and it kind of led to the discussion, and I touched on it briefly, but you're a much more articulate and well-spoken person than I am, and I think this is a very important thing. This is the whole reason why we started the podcast, was not to bitch about like how hard it is to be a cook in Seattle, but is to try to explain it and bridge that gap of, you know, you're never going to win Reddit over. They're just fucking miserable, but, you know, I have learned, I'll tell you this much. Me and you have worked for 15 years. Yep. Skillet, where you at, Matt? I'm a little more chill now. Probably the weed. But, you know, I remember with Where You At, Matt, I was really gung-ho. I regret it so much, but I was so gung-ho about saving him money and, like, doing everything. And we had a lot of conversations, like, during the day. It's like, I'd be like, hey, I don't think these fees are fair, blah, blah, blah. And you broke it down to me, and I'm a very bullheaded person. I rarely change my mind, and you changed my mind. And you were like, cool, this is why it works this way. And I think, let's just say it, like, you know, if someone came up, you know, is like, hey, this is bullshit. It's free in Europe. Why can't we go to Seattle Center for free and go shop for free? This makes sense to me. Make it make sense.
So I would say in terms of a generality for events, you know, there's that always that conversation, especially in Seattle. I grew up here since I only lived out of Seattle for about 10 years when I was in LA going to school and things like that, and worked in Hollywood for a bit in background production. So the big trick is things cost money, right? So how do you offset the cost of an operation? So like just like a restaurant, right? You got your hard cost. Doesn't matter how many people come in the door. I mean, you can always shave off a bartender or a waiter or something like that. But at the end of the day, it's just things cost money. And so I think the big trick here is that a lot of cities traditionally used to have free to the public events. And we still have a lot of amazing ones. So I always tell people, hey, if it's not for you, there's a ton of other things to do. And I think that's the thing, but it's the educational factor, right? So the Seattle Christmas Market, I can only speak to so much. We had a small hand in it. Mm-hmm. What happened, how we were involved was helping to bring in some of the vendors. Right. Not so much from our markets, but helping to nurture that experience. Because we've had a lot of experience. So Fremont's turning 35 years this year.
Incredible, yeah.
So the goal was, from the organizer standpoint, was to make sure that people, the vendors had a really good time. Thing was then. So we didn't really have much say in the operations, but I know that there was an op-ed in Seattle Times from a writer, and it was clear that they hadn't probably reached out and done much research. Right. But the reality was this event is not part of the Seattle Center. Mm-hmm. This was not part of Winterfest, even though it was part of Winterfest. And I think that was the miscommunication. So I think early on it was about $15 after all was said and done, and then there was a $32 ticket that was for you could go as many times as you want. So without being able to speak to their numbers, because I don't know all their numbers because that wasn't our side, but I could guess that if you're spending, I remember when I tried to rent the Seattle Center back for Trucktoberfest, it was about $20,000 for the day.
Yeah.
So if you have it for 60 days, you can do the math on what that probably costs, then garbage, then electrical, then all fancy, the infrastructure. Security, yep. I'm guessing that event probably is somewhere in the millions to produce, to staff, to secure, to have all that. So I don't know. I mean, the thing is that people should be allowed to charge what they want, and it should be up to the general public to decide whether they want to go or not. I get the whole concept of like, hey, why do I have to pay money to spend money, right? Mm-hmm. That's the trick. One thing I will say is that I know that the vendors in there did phenomenal.
Right. That's right.
Phenomenal. Yep. Like, I can't share numbers, but it was so nice for us to hear that those vendors did well.
Right.
Because that's our priority in any of our markets. But yeah, I mean, like the Seattle Night Market, we were on a suggested donation prior to the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
I had sponsors back then.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't had a sponsor for the Seattle Night Market since the pandemic.
Why do you think that is?
I don't think people really care to spend money. Like, I don't think corporate
don't see the value in it, or
you know, unless it's really experiential. Mm-hmm. I don't know that people like corporate America is really looking to invest in like you know presents, you know, and things and dumping money. Sure. Also with the pandemic. A lot of people went to a digital marketing, right? So like being on site, that ROI has always been tough for event marketing.
Yeah.
So what I always tell people is the Seattle Night Market is 100% powered by the people.
Right.
So I only have three revenue streams in general, right? And this is we have ticketing, if we use it. Mm-hmm. We have vendor fees.
Yep.
And then we have sponsorships. Yep. That's really it. Yeah. I mean,
sponsorships are kind of...
That sounds hard.
Yeah.
Or merch, but then you got to spend money on merch. Yeah. And right. I have...
You got to buy the merch.
You should see how many tote bags I have left over on a lot of events. It's hard to...
Yeah. Yeah. You know, for my events, like I do, like, you know, I do the digital stuff.
I still own my food truck rodeo.
So one of the things we've always tried to do real quick is we always try to find a way to provide value in the ticket. Right. So when you go to the Seattle Night Market, there's a $15 ticket, which is just general admission.
Right.
We do a 15% off ticket discount beforehand. So that's actually pretty good. It's almost about $5 off. The $25 ticket gets you two cocktails, and then it gets you also a tote. So the value of that is well over $45 and entry. And so that has been our secret to success is trying to find a way to say, hey, you need to buy a ticket, but let me give you something in exchange for it. And so that's been our secret sauce, and it works most of the time.
And would you say, like, yeah, the money's important, but like the value is having an accurate count of how many people are coming?
No, that's just in terms of quality control. Yeah, yeah. That's why we sold out. We cut tickets off that morning. Right. I could have probably sold another 1,000 tickets, but it could have just been a nightmare. And we had people wait.
Did you have any negative feedback about not being able to have tickets?
The thing is too is we never make promises. We suggest people buy early.
Yeah.
The thing is if we knew a week out that we had sold out, we could add more bars. We could add more security. We could add another gate. Typically, we will sell majority of our tickets the day of, less than within 24 hours.
Yep. It helps you organize when you know how many people are going to show up.
Well, it helps me understand because, that event itself, just so you know, and I shared these numbers with you, and I'm fully transparent about that. I have no shame.
Which I love
that.
About you. Yep. Yep.
That event before I break even is about $60,000.
Yep.
The venue itself is $12,000. Security is about $3,000. The insurance, to have a bar staff and have all that alcohol, that's probably $10,000. I mean, it's like a restaurant, right?
The city sell permits for all that, too?
100%, yeah.
So you're paying that.
And those are still reasonable. However, the thing is when you start stacking, my staff to organize it on salary, for at least a 60-day window, paying them well above minimum wage, because I just believe in that, right? Yeah. So, there's been a lot of them where I break even. And it's hard, right? You know those days in any restaurant business, it's like, I do it because we love it and we try to represent our city and bring these things to it.
But the landlord doesn't take that as rent.
Well, so what I'll tell people is, you know what? At the end of the day, my costs are exactly the same whether two people walk in or 3,000 people walk in.
Yep.
We do our best. By no means. I mean, we're in office. We're four people on a regular basis. Three of us are full-time. Yeah. That's how big our organization is.
Yeah.
So people sometimes, I think, we're much bigger.
Well, it's because the quality of stuff you produce feels like a team of like 20 people, you know?
But one thing I will say is the only event that we charge for, because Seattle Christmas Market is not ours. That was a client partnership.
Yep.
Seattle Night Market is the only one we charge for. So South Lake Union, Fremont, our sister org, which is Ballard Farmers Market, that's partly owned by my family. Those are all free. And so the goal is that really where the costs come into play is where we have to charge since we don't have large underwriting and things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will say, before we talk about last time, I talked to a couple of vendors. That's amazing. I did talk to a lot of vendors because I didn't do it this year because I was like, I just couldn't take the risk. And then everyone told me I was an idiot. but a lot of vendors, when I asked them, like, how do you feel about the ticket pricing? And there's two major things. It's like, well, if they're not charging tickets, they're going to charge us more.
Yeah.
Which is go fuck yourself.
The food, there's we always had a bunch of food trucks underneath the Space Needle. I feel like that. It felt like a food truck rodeo type thing.
Yeah.
They used to charge for that, didn't they? It was like $22 to get in.
I don't remember, to be honest.
It's not an old concept. I mean, it's not a new concept.
Well, right. Here's the thing.
Overhead.
Here's a trick. So the Hangar 30 Flea is one other event we charge for.
Yep.
And this came back from an old school flea market vendor. His name is George. He goes to like the Alameda and the Rose Bowl and stuff like that. He does the whole circuit, right? And for the longest time, when I was young, I grew up since I was 11 at the market in Fremont, and he would say, Ryan, you gotta fucking charge at least $1 on it. Put a gate on it.
Yeah.
He says it will change the wallet within the market. Now, I'm not saying that that's proof of concept, but the thing is that if you think about it, if someone's paying to get in, a lot of times that will change the demographic, and people will likely buy a lot of the vendors say they will buy more.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Like the Fremont Sunday Market and the South Lake Union Saturday Market. I have vendors sometimes that say they do better at the South Lake Union Saturday Market because it's smaller. But the people down there, that demographic that come down to shop, they shop.
Yep.
Fremont, people still like brunch and stuff like that. But I will not everybody, like a lot of people just come down to hang out. And that's beautiful. Our goal is to make sure that we can find ways to refresh the wallet so that our vendors can be supported. And then the other thing is our vendor fees are generally based around about a 10% rule. So if I charge you $200, I'm expecting that you can do about a minimum of $2,000 that night. That's our general rule of what we can charge. So like if a crafter, if they're $75, I expect that they can do $750. Right. Whether they can do it, that's really up to what they're determining to do.
But that's kind of how you're basing
how they pitch
it. And I think, that's always been like the best number for me. Like I'm totally cool with 10%.
Yeah.
I'm what you would call, I guess, rakophobic, which is like in the poker community, like when a casino takes too much off of the top for a poker tournament. People call it rakophobic because it's called the rake. Whenever like XYZ music festival is like, oh yeah, like we take 25% plus this.
It's crazy.
I'm offended, and I'm usually not. I try to be as nice as possible, but it just feels bad. It feels like.
And what they'll say is well, then just raise your prices, which then changes the saleability, right? So, like, I know for the festivals that we do, if I was to look at the general demographic of festivals that are in comparison, we've always charged less, right? And we've always felt like Jerry and I, who's my director of operations, who handles a lot of that, we work directly with a lot of the vendors to say, what do you think of this price? Is it fair?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it just isn't, but, you know, that's the reality. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, Bite of Tacoma, or no, Bite of Seattle, that, I mean, they charge, you know, I think it's 21% on top of already high fees.
Yeah, yeah,
and I'm saying, hey, I get it. There's a lot of expense. There's electrical to figure out, but that doesn't even include electrical.
Yeah.
The Seattle Center's always been like that, though. Yeah.
And so it's just tough, right? Like, how do I pitch you on a fun project where I can make money, you can make money, and the general audience that's attending can enjoy themselves? That's trickier nowadays, right? Because people are like, hey, I'm just not as prone to go out. Yeah. People have higher expectations. And as soon as you put a dollar in front of anything, people have expectations, rightfully so. Yep.
Before I lost my train of thought was, like, a lot of vendors did say that. They're like, hey, when people spend money to get in, they're more likely to spend money. And that was the other feedback I got.
A lot of people have a lot less money these days.
Yeah, sure, that's true.
And no. Seattle is definitely a lot different than when I grew up here, and even 10 years ago. Yep. It's a much more of, I would say, there's a high and low, but there's no middle, right?
Thanks, Amazon.
Yeah, okay, next week. before we finish this conversation, what do you want to say to what's the best thing the customer base can do to help, like, your organization? Like, what do you want from them other than buying tickets early and supporting?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's really focused around the tickets, but I think it's as long as folks understand that there's inherent costs. You know, I think the idea that if it's free to the public, it's not free to the organizer. There's a lot of things. One thing I will say: waste management. Recology, which is really the only game in town these days, their prices have increased 40% as of this year alone. So what used to cost me at Seattle Street Food Festival for a two-day festival was about $12,000. It would roughly cost me almost $40,000 to put trash in the right things and have them disposed.
Wow.
It's crazy.
So real quick, moving on. It's been kind of interesting couple weeks for delivery fees. Dave, have you been paying attention to the minimum wage stuff?
Yeah.
Do you use anything for Don Lucho's?
DoorDash, and I just signed on a Uber Eats because they gave me like a 3-month free trial.
What's your thoughts about them?
Still figuring out. Yeah. I mean, with DoorDash, I know they take 30%. They let you increase 20%, so in the end, they only take 10. I mean, it's not like we do a huge volume with it because our prices are, they need to be spiked.
You know?
They need to be higher than normal.
It's been like two years since I've used it, and I feel like so much has changed in it. Like, you know, back then when I started using it, it was the pandemic. That's the only reason I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I called some other chefs and I was like, hey, man, they want to take like 40% in fees. And you know, he was just like, Dave, 60% of something is better than 60% of nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, you're right.
Okay. So I'm going to do this real quick. So basically Ryan, do you know about it? There's some legislation or whatever that they have to basically pay like, $23 an hour for delivery drivers.
I think it's based on it was from what I understand from the mayor's office was it was put in place with the idea that it would help protect the drivers and better support those with a livable wage. What I'm hearing, though, lately from a few of my favorite restaurant owners, one was Spice Wall, who we had a short conversation with, and it wasn't directly into his experience, but he had said that it's definitely impacting the deliveries that that most people are seeing by about 10%. So the idea is that people are now having to spend an extra $5 per order, so now the fees are going up, and I'll be honest, I've ordered less on DoorDash as a result. I'd rather just go to the restaurant.
Are you looking for that like $37 cup of coffee? There was an article out this week about somebody who bought a cup of coffee and it equaled like almost $40.
Damn.
Okay, so I went on Uber Eats just now. I got a $14.58 value meal of some sort, $3.99 delivery fee, and then on top of that, $12.72 in taxes and other fees.
Yeah, that's where it is.
$4.81 in service fees. $5 for local operating fee.
That's it right there.
And that, yeah, that's the thing that they just added, extra $5, and then taxes is $2.91. So our $14.58 meal has now turned into $31.29 before taxes. Now,
what did you?
Sorry,
order? what did you buy?
Yeah.
I haven't ordered anything. I just want to see what. Oh,
okay. Was it from McDonald's?
Yeah, McDonald's.
Damn.
Yeah.
See? Well, that's the thing, man.
I didn't buy it. I'm just saying.
I know. Yeah. But this person who ordered the cup of coffee, and you can tell they've been ordering cups of coffee for their office for a while, and they did the whole breakdown.
Yeah.
And you know, it was in one of our local publications, right. But it was like a $10 latte or something, and then with all the fees,
yeah, turned to 40.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So there is a hero that I found. There's a guy named Tony, and I saw it on Reddit, and I posted it. And what he does is he posts this thing over telephone poles and says, like, hey, fuck Uber Eats, fuck DoorDash. Like, I will deliver anything in Capitol, I believe it's Capitol Hill, for $5. And I'm fascinated about this. And and so I actually got his number, and we're going to give him a call because I got to know. Hey, is this Tony?
Hi, yeah.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So, bro, we're on the podcast right now. You're not live, but so I gotta know more about this. So tell us how you got started.
Well, I was just.
Are you on delivery right now?
No, okay. I'm not on delivery. I haven't started yet, but I'm walking to get in the zone, so to speak. I started because me and my buddy, we were at a bar and we had just played some golf, and he was like, What if you just cut out the middleman? And I was like, oh, you know, and part of it is I think the hard thing for a lot of people to understand is like how much it hurts the person ordering and the restaurant.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Uber Eats, they tack on all those fees. And I got a buddy that owns a restaurant in Chinatown. It's like Sichuan Cuisine. And Dave was like, yeah, they just tack on all the fees. That's how they get you. But that's how they do it. And I think partly you've seen so much inflation for the customer.
Yep.
You kind of want to get away from that. But the other thing that I think is kind of interesting here is, you know, there's this expectation in the restaurant business for tips, and I totally understand. But I think that maybe the person that is struggling right now because they don't have a lot of disposable income. You know, they're like, I just bought, I don't know, like a cookie and then like maybe like a, I don't know, like a coffee. And now I feel like I have to tip because I know that the person is struggling.
Yep.
And I feel like that really is beginning to affect the person that's paying.
Totally. 100%.
You know, and you know, I think partly kind of the challenge is like now instead of the economy looking like, people working together hand in hand, it looks closer to something like, well, I'm just trying to get you for as much money as I can.
That makes sense.
And I think, part of why I'm doing this is because I want to change your experience. I don't want to call you a user or a customer.
Mm-hmm.
You're an experiencer. You know, you're someone that, wants to have a good experience with the person that is handling your food. And, a lot of times like the DoorDashers and Uber Eats drivers, they don't really care, because they're not going to lose a customer. They just get dispatched to a random person. Yeah. They don't even see them half the time. So
you're saying, and real quick, I just want to, so you mostly do just Capitol Hill, right? That's your area?
Denny Triangle, SLU, Belltown.
And you're on
Cascade.
A bike. So you started this and has it been, you've been doing it for how long now?
About 10 days now, or about a couple,
is this your only job or do you do other stuff?
No. I mean, this is my only job, but I have other things that I'm working on right now.
So how does the math make sense? If you're taking a $5 delivery fee, like how long does each trip take you? Like roughly?
Okay. So kind of the thing is like, I picked that spot because, I know that I could be, let's say I'm in, You guys know where the Ross is at that Chipotle. Let's say I pick up a delivery at that Chipotle. And let's say, just for example, someone asks for their food to be delivered near the convention center, like 8th and Olive or something.
Right.
I could get it there in like 2 minutes. Hot, ready, fast. You know, plus the other thing is not only will it be hot, ready, fast, you're going to have a much better experience with me. The other thing is what's not being said
because
here
you
is
care.
Kind of like, yeah, it's because I care. It's like, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, like let's say the customer has, or the person that's ordering has the sniffles, so to speak.
Right.
You know, I'm going to notice that, you know what I mean? And that's the thing that's kind of missing here in this hyper efficiency type of economy, where it's taking the person out and saying, okay, like, let's just maximize our profits and minimize the human interaction for the people that are experiencing. And I think what ended up happening is they've over-indexed too far. They've went too far, and now people are just, they're hurt.
They're
upset.
Jaded.
They're angry, you know?
We're going to get you on the podcast soon, and we're going to dive way more into this because I'm fascinated by everything you do. Right now, real quick, how can people reach you?
You can reach me at this phone number of 206-712-8552, or you can go to www.tonydelivers.co and you can order over there and then send me a text and I'll go grab your food.
I fucking love it, man.
With some care.
Thank awesome. You, Tony, man. You're a rock star.
Yeah, we appreciate everything you do, man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Tony.
All right, take care. See you next time.
Fascinating. This is so punk rock. I love everything about it.
Do you think that those fees will remain at $5? I find like that maybe.
Well, now that he's been on the Seattle restaurant podcast, you know. No, I'm just joking.
Well,
that's a good question.
I mean, because I think that sounds phenomenal, but I do think as he goes more through it, it's going to be something that's going to have to evolve into a more balanced.
Well, I think everything's about to go up.
Gas,
parking. The year we have ahead in this country.
Well, he's on a bike.
He's
right?
on a bike. So I think the idea is like just to do as punk rock as possible, and like maybe if you can do six.
You know what we should do,
hour,
Sid? We should buy him a fucking helmet, like a really nice helmet.
What? With what money?
I would have like the back of it.
Oh, so you're saying get him a sponsor?
Sponsor, yeah.
Okay,
we should sponsor him.
Okay, we have no money, but if you want
true,
a sponsor,
true.
Money, hit him up.
Well,
and maybe
let's ask one of our sponsors. Yeah. We don't have any sponsors.
Pay for his helmet. Right on. Hey, Dave, you eat anywhere this week?
Well, I was lucky enough to be invited to a Chinese New Year's hot pot like party. That was pretty cool. Ate a bunch of deer that was, you know, is from that buck that the guy gave me the shoulder from a couple weeks ago. He made a really nice broth with the bones and the meat. Some shrimp balls and pork and beef. It was pretty great. And then I went to my local, you know, my usuals, Star Brass, yep. Double Tavern Burger, Ahar, Indian food on Snoqualmie Ridge. And that's about it.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. Like, I talk about this a lot where I'm like, man, I want to go to new places. But like, then you hit your old favorites. I was very lucky Saturday night. I got off and I went to the Edmonds Lunar New Year celebration.
I saw that.
And it was a last minute decision, which is ironic because like I literally text Ono. I'm like, hey, what's the deal with this event tonight? As much as like I bitch about like, hey, buy your tickets early. I'm like, and then I'm like, oh, fuck.
You're
I'm
like, hey.
Like it started at 7 at 6:30. I'm like, hey, I think I'm going to go to this thing. So I'm a hypocrite. and if it's sold out, I'd probably be like, this is bullshit. But
like, why am I waiting in line?
Yeah,
I know, right?
But Ono took care of me. It was great. Saw the Massive Monkeys. Nice. You know, from 36 Courses.
Yeah,
and they just recently played with Macklemore, which was pretty cool. I heard.
Not surprised.
Yeah, and amazing people. And me and Ariana got on the stage and did some moves, and that was fun. And then saw a really great band.
You demonstrate the moves real quick
right now.
Yeah,
I didn't hit record, so. but I really didn't. But then, and then I remember I wanted to go to Charcoal, couldn't make it in time, so we ended up going to Bar Dojo and having just a fucking really good meal. And so thanks, Louise, for hooking it up as usual. And then let's see. Like we've been talking about how our February feels like May. Hit up the Salt and Straw on a sunny February day, and it's been great. Carlo, I feel like I watch your Instagram. You eat out as much as I do. You're everywhere. What are some of your favorites?
I haven't been going out that much lately.
But what are some of your favorite spots?
Some of my favorites, I love La Cabaña on what's that, 105th over there by Greenwood. It's Central American food. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's super good.
I live in the mountains, so I don't get over there that often, but there's so much good food over there that I am desperately trying to go check out.
Yeah, for sure. And then I have I try to visit my cousin. My cousin does a take of Peruvian Japanese food over in Pioneer Square. It's called Señor Carbón, and he has like a great it's called Nikkei cuisine. So it's like the fusion of Peruvian Japanese, and they have like some super bomb. He actually got some sort of award for like the best sushi in town. But it's it's
say the name again one more time.
Señor Carbón. Señor Carbón, Pioneer Square. Wow. Yeah.
I feel like I haven't heard of it.
Shout out to my cousin, Joey.
I guess
he was in charge of that.
I haven't been to Nurnals yet. I feel like we got a lot of stuff to do in Pioneer Square. It's good to see it. It's coming back up. All right, what else? What else do you like?
Man, you caught me on kind of off guard.
Right,
there.
Right.
Kotu. Yeah. Hey, when I visited, when I caught you on the corner that time. Yeah. Caught you over there at Fremont Market. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Sure. Actually, here's a funny story. I think because you're also a pioneer. You're the one that started the Soleil spot. And I think I was at Soleil's maybe the first time you had me. And early in my career, I used to go really weird on my aiolis, on the colors. And sometimes I had food coloring stuff just to be a stoner asshole. And I think you're the person that, like, I kept getting crazier and crazier and getting more neon green. I'm like, yeah, this is so cool. And then Carlo fucking just calls me out. I was like, why the fuck is this shit neon green? I'm like, okay, I fucking took it too far. All right.
So wait, that's changed?
I chilled out. Now I make my aioli, it's just more rustic, and I think of you every time I make it. Ryan, you're surrounded by great food, and you always curate amazing lineup at all your markets. What are some of your favorite spots?
Well, I will say that as an organizer of festivals, I rarely eat at my events.
Yeah, I have noticed that.
So I have
to
go to other people's events because it's always, I mean, thankfully there's lines, but I never seem to time it well. Right. So I either do it right before. One of the places I always enjoy is Tabasum with their little samsas because they have these beefy cheese. They're just like empanada style. Obviously, when I can get in line, a lot of times you just have a line. So it's great. I got a kid who's six, so I have to kind of stick to a format of certain time formats of when I can go and what he'll eat.
Sure, sure.
He's pretty diverse. I mean, we try to explore a lot of different things. I mentioned I went to the Palace Kitchen not too long ago. That was one of me and my wife's favorite places to go.
Same.
I was even sharing with you that, you know, that they kind of got beat up with Seattle Times, which I thought was kind of unfair.
I read that. And, I mean, that's an iconic restaurant.
And I think it needs more. I feel like it needs... Like, I don't know. I've just been amazed at, like, just some of the conversations and articles that have been happening lately.
Man, okay. I've sent you some. It's kind of, like, I'm a sensitive person. And I feel like I don't represent Seattle restaurant scene, but, like, I feel like I'm part of it. I'm part of the living, breathing culture that it is. And so I get a little butthurt when, like, a lot of the articles seem more negative than positive. The Hamdi thing, I feel like they released it when all the allegations happened. I didn't see a lot of press when the cases got dropped. I sent you, there's two things that came to a head. So I kept on seeing these negative articles, and I wanted to say something because, Hamdi's, they're my friends. And but I never said anything, but then it came to a head. I think my least favorite trend in the world, and I'm sorry if I offend you, is when you see people doing their takes on fast food. I don't fucking need to see your version of a Crunchwrap. I don't need to see your fucking version of a Big Mac. Like, you see it all the time. Like, oh, fucking fast food. I'm sorry because I know a lot of my friends do this, but I just don't care. I will go to Taco Bell if I want Taco Bell. If you're going to do a pop-up, do something fucking cool. I don't know. I saw this article and it said, is this Seattle's most expensive Crunchwrap or like taking a Crunchwrap or something like that? So it's like those two things. Where it's one, it was like someone doing like a Crunchwrap, like taking a Crunchwrap, and then it's complaining about the price of it. And I sent it to you. I'm like, why is this an article? Why is this journalism? Like, there's so much cool shit in this city.
That's true, yeah.
Like, who gives a fuck about a Crunchwrap? Like, I don't know. So I don't know. I guess we have somewhat agreed to not go negative on this podcast, and we usually air out the things that we really want to bitch about before we hit record, and then sometimes we dip into it, but I don't know.
Kitchen is a touchy subject. There was an article written about it after the pandemic, and if you read the comments, it you know, I don't want to use the word heated. I feel like it was pretty civil, but a lot of people had a lot of strong different opinions. And because Palace had it,
it's an institution.
Well, Palace will always have my heart. I mean, I have to remember that, like, as a small business owner, you know, and I don't expect everybody to understand that. Like, if you pay for something, you should be your expectations should be met to some degree.
Sure.
But I mean, like, I went there, and I'll be honest.
How was it?
It wasn't as I remembered it. But I also have to remember that there's been a pandemic. And also the fact that I've known people that have worked there. And I mean, I know Tom Douglas, you know, through just the industry. I could give really no shit. I know that it will get up to the standard.
Yeah.
But like, come on. Like, I was just surprised. Like you said, like, there was a lot of articles that were written through the Seattle Times that were about the ice cream scoop, the Seattle Christmas market, the Palace Kitchen, and then some. And I got to tell you, I don't know that it really helps push things up or it improves it. And then my whole thing is, has always been, if I have an issue and I'm at a restaurant, I'll either be very discreet about it or I won't say much. But I certainly won't go up on like a Facebook or like an Instagram and be like, this food sucks and post a picture of it. I've been sometimes, you know, when I lived in LA, if something wasn't really to my liking, I'd say, hey, you know, I'm just not, this isn't quite what I think I ordered.
Yeah.
And most times, if it's constructive, you can go from there.
Exactly.
But like to write an article on it, I just felt like
keyword is constructive.
It just, there's
and almost. And it's the same thing with festivals and stuff. Yeah. Anyone says, like, I don't like your festival, I'll be like, well, what do you not like about it? Because if you don't tell me, I can't improve. Yeah. Same with like a relationship.
Yeah.
If you don't tell me how I can work towards something, I'm still in the same situation. And both of us are just going to be like,
Dave, neutral. You need to talk to me. If you want anything to change with our relationship,
No, it's funny. You know, I had some people the other day who it looked like, you know, they didn't like their food. Oh, they oh my God. They accidentally ordered the wrong food because they sent the oldest member of their party up to order. And he was obviously confused. And, you know, we were very patient and tried to help him through the credit card machine, which he acted like it was a robot from outer space. And then we brought in the food. It was all wrong. And, you know, I can't afford to just be like, all right, well, let me do another, like, four meals for you. So I'm like, what would you like to see from me?
Yeah.
You know, like, how, like, this is what you ordered. And all of it's good food. So is there something I could do, like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
And there wasn't. You know, they're just like, no,
they're
it's
like,
okay.
Yeah, give me four more.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, that might be what somebody wanted, but it just didn't happen.
Maybe it was that good of food. They were just hoping to get another meal.
Well, the plates came back clean. So I'm like,
that's
all right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Carlo, you have so much going on. What do you got to plug? Tell us about all the stuff you got going on real quick. I know we talked about it, but like what times is Bilo Bar open?
So Bilo Bar is on a winter schedule right now. We're trying to keep costs down and all that. We're going to start opening up a little bit more, but Thursday through Saturday as of right now, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. have been the busiest time frame, so we're just rolling with that. And then we're trying to do some pop-ups. We have a beautiful space.
What is it like at 2 a.m. there? I mean, I was there.
2 a.m.? Get the fuck out.
But I'm sorry. I guess, or like even 1 a.m.
That's what it's like. I'm trying to go home.
But even I got to work the truck in the morning. Even like
it's the law.
Yeah, no. Nobody, I'm sorry. What I meant to say is like even like 1 a.m., is it cracking there on a Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm an old man. I rarely go out that time. But
Saturdays are definitely like our busier day.
So if you like people, you want to meet people, go out.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
Saturday night, we have, like I said, we have a dance floor, we have a lounge
and
area,
here's
we have pool
the fucking
tables,
craziest
we have a patio,
thing.
We have fires. It's a very, very
it's
nice space.
I hate to, I can take this out if you want. I don't drink. And
we have non-alcoholic beer.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you do. And the CBD drinks too. But I was going to, I was like, me and the lady want to go dancing. And I was like, okay, we'll pay the cover's fee and go dance, whatever. What's the cover fee at Bilo Bar?
No cover.
$0 for the
guy.
Cover fee.
We want people to come in and, you know, if you're doing bar hopping, if you're going around Fremont, you can come in and out, you know? And that's what we want. We want people to get accustomed with the space. Maybe at some point in the summertime, we might move towards cover, but as of right now, we want everybody to come in there and get to know the space.
And that's really fucking cool. Like, I grew up, I was a dumb kid that liked to drink and go out to clubs all night when I was living in St. Louis. I spent so much money bar hopping, like $5. It's a vibe. And also, extremely accepting. Like, me and lady went out. We're, you know, some clubs you go out in Seattle, like, you're like, ooh, like, they're looking at us. Maybe it's just my paranoia, but,
you're probably just high.
Just a weed.
Everyone's looking at me. But no, like, sometimes you get a vibe. Like, when me and the lady went there, it was a lot of different groups of people. Everyone's getting along. There was no bullshit. Like, I had a great time.
Awesome.
So you have a great club there, and I highly recommend. I tell my customers, like,
and,
you know,
and that's the thing. Like, also, I just wanted to point out, like, we, you know, we're serving some strong, good pisco sours, like, well done.
Yeah, real quick.
So our cocktail program is a mixture of like Latin drinks or Latin cocktails, but we're going strong also on the Peruvian side because we are a Peruvian. Proven concept of
you've
bar
always
lounge.
Been really passionate about injecting like, you know, those you know, your culture into the drinks and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about Peruvian cocktails and
what yeah, you, so like yeah. Pisco sour is like definitely like the most.
What is that?
Pisco is a spirit. Some would call it a white brandy, but it's made out of grapes.
That's Dave's nickname.
But it's made out of grapes, and then Pisco sour is like, you know, it's a mixture of lime juice, simple syrup, egg whites, good. And I mean, it's a great thing to have a cocktail on a date or something like that, you know. So a lot of people show up early and, you know, try some of our menu. We have stuff on our menu, on our food menu, for instance, like that I don't have a Don Lucho. Yeah, so like it's pizza, completely different. Yeah. Like Lomo Saltado pizza. So like if you love or know the Lomo Saltado dish, we're throwing that on a pizza. Minus the fries. Yeah. Like, but we're doing the steak, the everything else that goes on it. Lasagnas, we're doing a traditional like Peruvian food in a lasagna. So
and you also got the pizza window going.
Pizza window's going, and we kept, you know, that was something that was already happening for ballroom. So we kept like what was happening there
and,
with the pizza
and
window.
For you
and
don't
that.
Know, I think I've posted pictures on my Instagram before, but the pizza, like if you get a slice of pizza, it's about the size
huge
of
your face.
It's the size of my child. Yeah,
it's a giant
it's
slice.
It's a giant slice.
On New Year's Eve, you're like, cool, grab a slice of pizza and like come back, you know. And I look at that like, well, it's good. I'll be back in
so
3 hours.
So we kept those giant slices. And then, we usually have pizza all the way up to 2 a.m. So if you're hanging out in Fremont and you want a late night bite, like we have that window usually open until
that's huge.
2:10.
And
as the weather gets better, the plants would be open until like 2:20.
I'm glad to know that's your guys' place too, because I wasn't aware of that. I just remember James and there were some changes over there. So I'll definitely.
It's fucking fun as shit.
Absolutely, man. And that's another thing I wanted to point out. Yeah. It's a great space, it holds about 450 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm open to getting people for pop-ups, for doing events. The place is up for, you know, rent if you want to pick a day and do an event. So all you guys got to do is, you know, reach out on Instagram, DM, or email.
Fuck it. Like, you were like, hey, like, if you want to do a pop-up, let me know. And I kept on thinking about it. And, like, me and my buddy Chris from Spokane have been talking about a lost pop-up for a long time. It's so beautiful with the plants and everything that, like, we're going to talk.
Well, that's the thing. Like, once you walk in there, like, you're transferred. That's why I really fell in love with the place, too, because it feels like you're in Miami. So that's the type of vibe I'm trying to bring. I love going and partying in Miami. I have a lot of friends there. So, like, taking over the space was just, like, really cool because I just really felt like once you walk in there and the vibe we're putting in and the cocktails and the music that we're playing, like, you get transported to Miami.
It's one of my favorite
or
spaces
Latin America,
in Seattle,
you know?
Bars. I've been a fan of it since
and we have a cage in the dance floor, too. So.
I was in there all night. Yeah.
People like that cage. Yeah,
you
yeah.
find Carlos in there.
Yeah.
After 2 a.m.
Yeah, like get the fuck cage. Out. I need to get in my cage.
I
think the name of the podcast is going to be 2 a.m. Get the fuck out. I need to get in my cage. Dave, Valentine's Day. What's going on?
I got some beautiful lamb ribs from some lamb that were raised in Oregon through Preservation Meats. And, I'm going to do a little lovely lamb special on Wednesday. I also... I'm not sure how this is going to go because I'm all by myself on Wednesday. No front of house, no cook until 5.
Yeah.
And so, I'll hustle.
You'll figure it out.
I kind of set Buckshot up like a food truck.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just hop from the front, hop to the line, and we'll get her done.
Have you ever thought about just doing a food cart? It's much easier. You don't have to walk around so much.
Just make it a brick bank.
All right. Ryan, what's coming up? You have a lot of shit coming up, I feel like. What are the events that people should know about? And so they don't find out about a Lunar New Year thing like day of and can't get tickets.
We've got our next event is going to be the Hangar 30 Flea, which is just we're really just trying to grow into eventually a monthly vintage bonanza, which you can just, you know, go check out.
And what's the date on that?
That's March 10th. It's we got a little mix up with our calendar, so it usually is on Saturdays.
Okay.
Taco Libre Truck Showdown is coming back. It's the first time in a year. That'll be at Hangar 30 on April 6th.
Shit, I got
that'll
write
bring back
down.
The Luchadors, Lucha Libre Volcanica, which I've just been a huge fan of, and I just try to find a way to justify bringing them out because it's more for my entertainment. I just think that it's just amazing to watch, and they're a lot of fun. They're a local group. Jose is from Mexico City and trains all of his team. And so we just try to find a way to support that. But we're also looking, Sid, for people who traditionally don't do tacos but have a really cool take on it. And we've talked back and forth about some things. But anyways, that's that. We are still trying to figure out if we can bring back the Seattle Street Food Festival, even just for a day out. That would be free to the public. It would be trying to go back in South Lake Union. So anybody who wants to help us sponsor that thing just to get it on the ground.
I feel like a lot of these things like have so much history. Like when you mention the Seattle Street Food Festival, my heart warms because I just have so many great memories cooking there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about always, you know,
I remember Sid, like, running up. Like,
it's really
looking out the truck and be like, where the fuck did chip jar go? And then I look over across the way and Sid's got our tip jar, like, you know, all the food trucks playing practical jokes on each other. And
it was a vibe back then.
Being awesome. And it was just good times.
And it would be the same format. I mean, the whole goal is really to celebrate what's curbside. And that's always been our thing. Our markets are not meant to be like a fine dining experience. They are the experience, and it's really to find a way to keep it affordable for everybody. When my folks started Fremont, the fees were lower, obviously, because it was 35 years ago, but the whole priority was never to make it the point of the barrier of entry for a micro business, because we talk small business all the time. It was like, you got to start small. Most of the businesses like Sid and that other folks that are non-food are micro businesses. They are one-person operation.
Yeah.
They're doing their marketing. They're doing their prep. They're selling on, So we really have to think of not just small business. We need to think of micro business. And so the whole goal with us and why I take such a, my parents never said take on the family business. But the whole thing is we want to always remain affordable as the city grows up. And so that's really our priority always is to make sure that you can find some of the most talented folks from handmade to vintage to street food to, whatever kind of product you're looking for, and you can have a place to sell. Then it's on you, though. You've got to find a way to engage with people and find out, are they looking for your stuff or are they not looking for your stuff? And if not, what are they looking for?
Right.
And so that's really been our secret of trying to make sure we can maintain. So, yeah, we got a lot of things going on. We're really trying to just kind of get it into more of a, an organized basket of things that we can really make sure it has that quality experience, So I really appreciate you guys having me on here.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Dave, I know you need to get out of here. I'm going to go on a little bit of a journey and talk about something real quick. So if you have to get out, that's cool. Let's see. Not many plugs. I am looking for some more locations on Friday, Saturdays. I got some coming up. But if you have anything fun, let me know. Looking like April 7th for the Bear. I got a meeting tomorrow about that. So it's looking like 80 tickets. So pay attention for that because that will sell out really fast. Okay. So 2 years ago, I was doing an interview with my friend Meg, I think for Eater or something like that. About Kutu, and I was supposed to launch like in April, and then I got a call from Jerry from the market saying, hey, what's the chances of you being able to do this open today? And I remember not being able to concentrate during the interview because I was like, what is stopping me from opening right now? Like, I think I have like 16 hours. This is 2 years to this day today. And I didn't know what the fuck Kutu was going to be. I really thought it might be a year project. I thought maybe it'll be like a 6 month project. I thought it might be a one night thing. I never had made the dish until that night. Like, I knew what the concept was, but I started a whole business and I thought I had time to recipe test and do all this shit. And I fucking put it together and
fingers crossed.
And I remember the first customer came up, ordered the mango chicken. And then after I got done making, I'm like, oh my God, first sale. And she goes, wait, there's no gluten in it, is there? I'm like, yeah, there's. Like, oh, I can't eat it, and walked away. I go, oh, this business is not going to last. and my girlfriend just sent me a picture. I guess I sold out that night. So just from the bottom of my heart, like before we started recording, like I said, we did talk about some negative stuff, and sometimes that shit drags me down. But I gotta remember how grateful I am to be in a community with people like Ryan, people like Carlo, that, for 10 years I've been trading spots with Carlo. Like, I'm so grateful to be in the city where there's people like Ryan doing cool shit. It's not easy to do. A lot of times you face a lot of negativity and criticism. And sometimes it's just easier to fucking go do another job, And I appreciate you, just grinding it. Like you said, when we talked about this before, like the Seattle Street Food Festival is not happening because it's just financially impossible to do. And the fact that you're like keeping your head down, still trying to make it work is fucking very impressive. So thank you for being a leader in this community and giving us small business a small chance. I would not be where I'm at if it was not for the Fremont Market. So anyway, thank you for everything. It's going to be a fucking fun year. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time on
the Seattle
Restaurant
Podcast. See you next time, guys.
Boom.
All right, let me get a picture real quick. I'm trying to get one.